Three Sports Guns presents the Brushback Pitches, high and inside.
Usually a 90-mile-an-hour fastball thrown at the batter's head.
The three Gunthers ready to shoot off their opinions on everything sports. The Brushback Pitches.
It's the Brushback Pitches podcast presented by Three Sports Guns, the two Gunthers, Blair
Harold,
in partnership with My Retro Radio. Thank you to our on-site producer, Rick Mason. Of course, going to get a whole lot into college basketball now that we're through, for the most part, the first weekend of Big Bracket. But before we even get there, a couple things we want to tackle first, starting with IU before we even get to the tournament. Tom Crean out as coach. And I know, obviously, anyone that's listening to the podcast knows my disdain for IU basketball more than anything. And Pops, we kind of touched on this, I think, near the end of the season when IU season really started to take a nosedive. About how this seems to be kind of a common thread when it comes to Crean, where he has these teams that seem to be immensely talented, but they just don't deliver. And I guess from going to you as sort of a non-biased opinion to start with, I mean, do you think it was fair that he was fired?
I think, Blair, they had injuries, and I know you can't use that, but unfortunately in today's in college basketball, college football, if you don't deliver, you're not going to be given enough time to do it. It wasn't, what, 3 short years ago he had them number one during the season and they went in and kind of fell on their ass in the tournament. It's disappointing. He got a Marquette team to the Final Four with Dwayne Wade. I honestly don't think he had anybody quite as talented as Dwayne Wade. I'm not for sure, Blair, who they're going to think they're going to get that's going to be better. I think this could be a situation where the grass seems green, but maybe it isn't green on the other side. I think there's some people wanting Steve Alford. I don't know if that's really the answer. And I think Indiana really needs to take a reality check to understand what they are. They're not a national power. They're a regional power. And I'm not for sure if firing Crean means that they understand that.
Yeah, well, you touched on what I wanted to hit on, because surprisingly, an account we follow, which is a Purdue account, Hammer and Rails, really seem to criticize the decision as a whole, coming from the standpoint that when Crean took over, the program was just a dumpster fire after Sampson was the coach before him, right?
Yeah, and he had some violations coming from Oklahoma, and then he decided to double down on the violations. It pretty much destroyed the IU program. Crean rebuilt it, had him to number one, like I said, 3 years ago. So I don't know if this was really, this is a knee-jerk reaction. And like I said, they might get a better coach. They might not. I don't know.
I guess from that standpoint, because we touched on this, and I said that I think at some point, and I've always been very critical of him because I think that obviously he can recruit, because I usually consider it on paper one of the more talented teams in the nation, but they just never seem to deliver on it. But I think I lean more towards what you're saying, because I think a little bit of perspective is important from the standpoint of where he brought the program from, where the program was just a couple of seasons ago. And I think when you take a look at those things, I think you look at it and go, well, this is a knee-jerk reaction, just because he wasn't that far removed from being number one overall seed in the tournament, and that team got knocked out in the Sweet 16 by a good Syracuse team. I mean, Jim Boeheim's a good coach. Jim Boeheim's a good coach.
Boeheim,
excuse me. And so I tend to agree with you. I think it's a knee-jerk reaction. And then, of course, you make the point, which is a good point of, well, if you're going to fire him, who's the replacement? Because it always is easy to say, well, this isn't good enough. But the tough question is, okay, well, what coach is going to take it to another level? And I don't know who that is. Do you think it's possible they could lure, I don't know, a Brad Stevens or a Greg Marshall from Wichita State? I mean, with it being IU, they're going to want a name guy.
Well, from what I read, Alford's name has been bandied about, but the reaction has been negative towards Alford. Not really sure why, but apparently he's soiled his name in this state. And if I'm Alford, I'm not for sure I leave UCLA for Indiana, because Indiana might be able to pay him more. You can't talk about heritage, because UCLA's got more heritage than IU. The only thing going for him is this is his home state, but beyond that, if I got to choose between coaching UCLA and coaching at Indiana, the only other thing I could think of is it appears that he's got to go against Oregon and Arizona out in the Pac-12, where here in the Big Ten, I'm not really for sure, because it looks like Michigan State is waning a little bit as far as national relevance. I mean, they're recruiting, but last couple of years, you could say that Michigan State has not been what they've been in the past. So I think you could overpay him and you could say, hey, you could win the Big Ten. I think those are viable arguments. But for whatever reason, people just seem to be down on Alford.
That's what Hammer and Rail said, too. They thought it would be a miss. With what he's done at UCLA, I guess I agree with you. I'm not really sure why people are so critical of it, because really, if he could do that at UCLA, it's kind of a similar situation from the standpoint of a program that is used to being really good and has not been for a while. And so, I mean, look what he did there. I don't know. Would you say it's easier to recruit at UCLA than it is in Indiana?
I don't know.
Just because it's LA and California versus, you know, Bloomington?
Definitely. I think that's a big plus, Blair. I mean, where would you, if you're a kid, where would you rather go play your basketball? LA and Hollywood and movie stars and all that jazz?
Yeah.
Or here,
I mean,
in Indiana?
You already covered the big points. I mean, usually what IU's recruiting hit standpoint has, or one of the things it holds over a lot of programs, is its history of winning. But like you said, UCLA tops that. So really, then it comes down to, I guess, location.
Let's face it, Indiana is just Kentucky North. I'm sorry, it is. For all intents and purposes, it's Hilljack country. I think Greg Marshall is a good get, Blair. I don't know if that's going to satisfy the numbnuts down there, but I think that would be a really good get. The question is, does he want to come? And I'm not for sure. I think if he could recruit as he does and coach, I think he could definitely win it. That would be a good hire. As far as anybody else, what other name did you mention?
Stevens, Celtics coach.
I'm not sure why he would come back to Indiana. He looks like he got something going in Boston. I think if they could hold on another year or two, at some point, LeBron is going to start for getting older. And I think they got a chance to maybe do something as far as winning the East. No, I don't see Stevens coming back either. I think your best bet's Marshall. You know, I don't really know if he's going to want to come, but that's who I would focus upon. It's pretty obvious he knows what he's doing.
Besides him, I just don't think there's going to be enough names that are big enough, because would you look at, just thinking of the brackets, I mean, the Rhode Island coach has clearly done something, because that team's usually solid, and they're having a pretty good season this year.
That's Bobby Hurley's brother. That's Danny Hurley.
I think we could agree he's probably a pretty good candidate, but I don't think he's big enough for IU.
Well, Blair, I don't know, but I mean, could you sell those people down there on Marshall? I don't know if that's a name enough.
I don't know how you couldn't.
Well, because I think they want a splash. They want a name. They're going to say, we want a name. That's why there's probably this initial thought of Alford. But I think they have to understand who they are. And at this point, they're regionals. Like we talked about with the Wisconsin football program, Nebraska, regional power. Indiana is a regional power. They're not a national power like they were under Bobby Knight. Understand that, and then you could go out and better understand who you can get as coach, and then how and who to recruit. Because if you're getting the athletic guys, the problem is with these athletic guys, some of these athletic guys, frankly, can be lazy. Because I've seen this with Gene Katie at Purdue. Katie would get his type of guys that played hard, but they're not very athletic, and they got into the NCAA tournament, and they lost. So it seems like he tried to go out and recruit more athletes, but the problem is those athletes, the ones he were getting, didn't want to work, therefore were lazy, and then you'd be disappointed. So I think Indiana has to understand who they are. Then you could better accept Marshall, as opposed to saying we're a national power and we should have like somebody like Alford. I think that's where Indiana is right now.
I think if they weren't excited about Marshall, it'd be a huge mistake, because I still think he's an amazing candidate for what he's done.
I agree.
Wichita State.
You're right.
Here's another one for you that probably isn't as flashy, but I think based on what they've done the last couple of seasons is worthwhile. How about the Baylor coach?
That's,
I don't remember his name.
That's the Drew. What's one of the Drews? Yeah, I think that would probably be a good get. I'm not sure why you'd leave Baylor to come to Indiana. I think that, you got Kansas in your way. The heritage is for Indiana, but he's done a really nice job of Baylor. It's one of the Drews, isn't it? It's Bryce Drew, I think. No, he's done a really good job. I mean, that'd be a guy to look at. I think you'd have to probably pay him to come up here.
Yeah.
He appears to know what he can do recruiting. Honestly, the Big Ten men's basketball is kind of in a transitory stage, because it used to be Michigan State was the big team. Seems like Izzo's is losing influence in recruiting or whatever. So I think you could get somebody to come up here, as long as they could recruit, they could probably consistently win, because they kind of what Wisconsin's doing. They don't necessarily recruit nationally, but they're there every year, maybe Maryland to a point.
System.
But I think it's there to be won. So I think, yeah, if you bring Drew back, I think it's Bryce Drew, that would probably be a good hire too.
One that I don't think Indiana will consider, nor do I think he'll look to jump jobs this season, but I think a guy who's going to be in line for some big gigs here soon is, Chris Collins, the Northwestern coach. Also Patino at Minnesota, but more so Northwestern. If both of them do what they've done this season and build on it, I think you'll see both of them be hot names here very soon.
I would think Collins is going to be this year, because he's taken a Northwestern program that couldn't get in the NCAA tournament unless they bought tickets, and they come close and arguably could have beat Gonzaga to go be in the Sweet 16. He could probably write his ticket anywhere he wants to go. You just wonder, though, is he waiting until Krzyzewski leaves Duke?
Good question. That's a very good question. Don't forget, how much longer do you think Roy Williams is going to coach? That's another one.
Well, that's another one, too. I don't know. I think Williams is older than Krzyzewski, but yeah, that's a good one. The problem is, I think where the North Carolina people think they can only get, it's like the White Sox thought, we can only hire guys that either played or coached for us. I think it's the same thought with North Carolina. They got it right with Roy Williams, but there have been some hires at the North Carolina tree. It just hadn't worked out. Could you imagine you bring a Duke guy in to coach North Carolina, what some of those people would do down in North Carolina?
That's true.
They'd probably go crazy.
Speaking of Patino, how much longer do you think Father Patino's going to coach? Because he's not a young chicken either.
You mean spring chicken.
Whatever, same thing.
No, yeah. Good point. I can't remember. Did the NCAA do anything to them for this prostitute
gate? I don't
think
so, because they self-imposed their postseason ban last year, and people said that kind of stood out because I think a lot of people were projecting to be a top four seed, like a 1-4 seed, and I just don't feel like I've heard anything about it this year. I don't know if it's gone.
It's gone. I think the NCAA just threw a bunch of dirt on it and moved on to the next scandal, which is at this point Baylor, which they're going to do nothing about because there's always a scandal. I think the NCAA's philosophy, Blair, is, yes, we'll let this fire burn out because there'll be another fire to get your distraction off this fire. Because the NCAA doesn't seem to be doing anything other than collecting a lot of money from the networks. That's it. As far as functioning as somebody to oversee things and penalize and do stuff like that, not interested. You want to write me a check? I'm right there.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, what do you think of Konzo Martin going from Cal to Missouri? Is that an upgrade? And where do you put the Illinois basketball job in terms of attraction for a coach?
I don't really think it's attractive.
Since we're talking college coaching.
I think, Blair, that Martin is an opportunist. He is your Lane Kiffin of college basketball world because he took his Missouri State team, I think he got them to the NCAA tournament, leveraged that into a Tennessee job, was okay, leveraged that into a Missouri job, was okay, leveraged that into a Cal job.
No, vice versa. Okay. He left Cal to Missouri.
Okay. He leveraged Cal in Tennessee, had a good recruiting class. They didn't make the tournament this year. Now, all of a sudden, because Missouri has hit rock bottom, Konzo Martin looks like a better hire. Well, that's true. I mean, you or I might look a better hire, considering how bad Missouri was this year. I think he's just a contractual opportunist to jump ship, because I think after the honeymoon period, you realize this guy probably is not a good coach. He might recruit, but I don't think he's a very good coach. Missouri might get a bump, but I don't really necessarily think it's anything big.
And the Illinois job?
I don't know what the hell Illinois has done. In hiring Gross, I think they got a guy that was a mid-level, I can't remember where he came from, but I think he made the tournament a year or two. But he's managed to take that thing and shipwreck it pretty damn good. They got the guy out of Oklahoma State who seems like a pretty good hire. I think he's got a lot of work to do. I think, again, regional power. I think if you play your cards right and you recruit pretty decently, I think you could probably get that team in the NCAA tournament 2 out of 3 or 2 out of 4 years, but it's not a regional power. I don't know if they're a regional power. They're trying to get to that point. You got to recruit. The philosophy usually is you got to go up to Chicago and get some guys out of Chicago. Well, maybe. But, I mean, as long as you could recruit nationally, and then this guy's going to have some contacts out of Oklahoma, Texas, I don't think it really matters where you get the people. He seems where, I mean, he got Oklahoma State to the tournament last year. He seems like a good hire. We'll see. They're below Indiana. They're obviously Purdue. They've managed to slip below Northwestern, which I'd like to tip my hat and say, way to go, Illinois.
Okay, let's talk Purdue then before we get into the brackets as a whole. Here's the million-dollar question, Pops.
You mean
what do you take out of the game?
So if I get this right, I get $1 million?
If you get your brackets right, then yeah, I'm all over the place.
No, I've contacted Trump, Blair, and I had him declare my brackets a federal disaster area. It's just that bad. I think I like what I saw from going inside. Early on, that Thomas kid was really getting loose and hitting some shots. And then when Painter decided to put Haas in, that's an understanding of doing what you do best, which is pounding the ball down low, and then you put Swanigan to go high low, and that really worked nice. And I think that's the best thing. There's no style points in the NCAA tournament. The only thing you have to do is win, and that's what they did. I don't like blowing a 19-point lead. You can't do that. That's not a prescription for winning games, because eventually you're going to go up against a good team that's going to take advantage of that. But I think that now you're in the Sweet 16. I thought they could get in the Sweet 16. I think this is now gravy time for them, because I don't know how many people picked them this far. But let's say a 4 seed probably should get to the Sweet 16, don't you think?
Yes.
Okay, well, you got where you want. Now you got the number one Kansas team. Here's an opportunity for you to get people saying Purdue, because I don't think any of us really believe in Kansas. I don't.
No.
Okay. So here's a chance to make Bill Self look bad again in the tournament and to put your name maybe on more of people's lips, the pundits, maybe even recruits, if you can go out there and beat a Kansas team.
This is the year to do it. You talked about Michigan State, who, let's put the asterisk on there, as of this podcast, that game has not happened, and we'll get into it, but they look pretty good against Miami, so if I'm Bill Self, I think I'd be a little bit nervous because it is though in Michigan State. But with IU not making the tournament, then saying they'll do the NIT, then bailing out of the NIT, and Michigan State being down, this is a year to make some hay.
Well, so far they're making some.
Go ahead.
So far they're making some hay. I'd like to
make yes, the Iowa State win is a good win.
Yeah.
But I mean, even more so.
In tournament, Blair, a win is a win is a win. Like I said, there is no style points because it's a one-and-done proposition. I think Purdue has got a beneficial draw, and they've taken advantage of it. Where in other years, you'd like think that the committee has something against Purdue. This year, it seems like they've rewarded them for winning the Big Ten, and thus the opponents have lined up. Like I said, now you got Kansas. Here's a chance to really have people talking about Purdue, which they haven't talked about Purdue recently, unless they're talking about how bad the football program is. Beat Kansas, then you're playing for the Final Four, which doesn't happen around here a lot, but you beat a name program, and Purdue doesn't do that a lot either. So you got to take advantage of your opportunities. Nobody really knows the next time Purdue's going to get somebody of Swanigan's ability. Maybe yes. Next year, maybe not. You got to take advantage of this.
I agree with you that there's no style points. Winning is winning. That was my attitude after the Vermont game, who I thought Vermont is a solid program. Obviously, though, the big thing is, though, winning is winning, but blowing a 19-point lead, I think, still raises concerns. And I don't know. What do you think? Because I still think Painter, for the most part, and I can understand because he's a freshman, but I feel like at this point, Carson Edwards has elevated himself to playing above his years. And I feel like Painter is still keeping the leash on him to a certain extent, because Tyler texted me last night and made a good point, is that Purdue doesn't have a bench, and they don't, because Spike doesn't really play, so they go like seven deep.
No, I said that earlier. They bring off Haas, and they bring Edwards, and that's it. And if they get in foul trouble, they got a problem. He loves the slow white guys, Klein, Matthias, and PJ Thompson. My point to you last night was none of those guys could really get open other than a couple shots. That one, Matthias hit that fadeaway three end of the first half, and they didn't need him last night, but chances are when they play Kansas, they're going to need everybody, and none of those guys could really score off the dribble. They can't really make their own shot. They got to be set up, and they're going to have to hit some shots to help beat Kansas. At times, Purdue wanted to play Iowa State's pace, which was where I think the run came, and you can't do that because if you're a team that pounds it in the middle, you want to slow it down, and I think Purdue got away from it. I would say last year they probably would have lost this game because I think they had a tendency last year and the prior years to want to just constantly fall in love with the three. This year, when they needed to, they pounded it down to Swanigan, and I'd like to see more of that, but you're going to have to get something out of your perimeter, and at this point, they got literally nothing last night, and I think that and wanting to not play your tempo, play the other team's tempo, led to that going from, was it, that they got it down to two or one?
Iowa State took the lead.
Okay, well, you can't do that, but at least they figured out you go back to Swanigan. You got to play your game. You can't play the other team's game.
I think early Purdue managed to play Iowa State's pace and do all right because they were hitting some shots. And then I think Purdue did what Purdue teams in the past did, is they got comfortable, obviously, with a 19-point lead. Painter, I think, let Swanigan sit too long, which is a decision that I think if he really would have gotten a lot of criticism for, if Purdue would have found a way to blow this game. Because, and I get it, you were up 19. I totally don't have a problem with the decision to sit him, but it seems like he waited entirely too long once Iowa State really started to make some headway to put him back in. Back to what I was saying, I think that he's not playing Carson Edwards enough. As you talk about the guards who are mostly stand shooters, I just feel like last night, Carson didn't play enough.
No, he prefers Blair's to go with his veteran slow white guys and PJ Thompson to trust them, and I got that, but if you understood that you substituted Haas in at a point where it looks like the game was closed and you realized that we're going to play our game, which means we're going to pound it down low, then you need to understand that you're getting nothing out of Klein. You could play Matthias because he's probably your best defensive player,
yes. But
you're not getting anything out of Klein, Blair. You're not getting a hell of a lot out of Thompson. Put Edwards in to help because he could score off the dribble. He could also hit the three, and I think that
too.
I'll tell you what, if Purdue had that Thomas kid, I think they're a Final Four team because that guy could shoot. But I think you need to understand that, and you're right. I would have liked to have seen more of Edwards, but that's just Painter's way. I think he'd rather go with the veterans.
Right. I got two questions left for Purdue. We'll get to the brackets. In your opinion, Pops, where does Swanigan rank from a player that has that will that you could see it last night, I think, for sure, especially because even on the sidelines when they were up 19, he was constantly pleading to be put back in the game. But where does Swanigan rank for you in the history of Purdue basketball when it comes to a player whose willpower and desire not to lose fuels the team? Because I think you saw that on full display last night. And as much as I love the Baby Boilers, I think he beats, hands down, any one of the big three from that era when it comes to his just desire and fire to want to win.
Well, I think he beats Robinson, too, Blair, because Robinson, generally speaking, was bigger and more athletic than a lot of guys, but when he went up against NBA types at Duke, he just was taken out of the game. He didn't play defense. His game was predicated on jump shots, didn't have a post-up game. I never thought Robinson was somebody that just, like, fueled the team. It was from the standpoint of scoring, but not necessarily anything else. Swanigan fuels the whole team. It seems to me he has a leadership role. He plays defense. He blocks shots. Excellent passer, and I think that he is the crux of this, and it's the whole reason that Purdue has gone as far as they have. And I think that even going back to the 88 team that was the number one team that had Todd Mitchell and Everett Stevens and Troy Lewis, I think this guy's probably the best all-around player I've seen here at Purdue in my time.
That's why I asked you, because you have obviously a much larger perspective, but it just seems like that's something that Purdue hasn't had. Mentally, obviously, more recent times, it seems like Purdue mentally shrinks, where Swanigan just refuses to lose,
right,
especially this season.
The logic of taking him out, according to what the peeps on CBS said, they took him out before the 12-minute TV timeout, and he did that in the first half, brought him back, and I think you're right. His failure to bring him back at the TV timeout at 12 minutes could have backfired. And I was sitting there thinking with 6 minutes to go, Christ, we're going to lose this game. And now not only are we going to go from last year was a 13-point lead, right? The year before was a 7-point lead with a minute left to do. Purdue's writing a book on how to blow leads. I'm like, God, this cannot happen again. But luckily with Swanigan, they figured out a way to win.
Also, let's give a lot of credit to Vince. Big V's come up big to close out the season and had another monster game last night. He's become very dominant, I think, inside rebounder, and very much so. I think, obviously, Painter figured out that the lineup of Vince at the 4 and Swang at the 5 is just devastating to a lot of teams because they move a lot faster. And Vince, I think, despite being, 6'6", 6'7", has become very effective offensive rebounder.
Charles Barkley proved, Blair, that size doesn't matter. It's will. And I think that's what you're seeing out of Edwards, certainly Swanigan. I mean, he's not 7 foot, but someone told me one time, defensive rebounding is all about will and want to. You have to do both, and you're seeing it. Offensive rebound, we've seen it with the Bulls, too. It just when you're not shooting well, it extends possessions. How you kill a defensive team, because they could work as hard as they can, force a missed shot, and when you get an offensive rebound and score, it kills teams. And I think Roy Williams talked about this, too, about how big offensive rebounding is. And as much as I've skewered Painter for coaching, seems like he's gotten this right for the most part all year, other than you had some doubts last night. I don't know if you did, but I did. But
I did.
You can only do what you can only do with the guards. He probably didn't recruit as well as on the guards, but to your point earlier, if Edwards is playing better, more effective, I'd set Klein to put Edwards in more. That's the one thing I would complain, other than Swanigan is your horse. You can't let him sit on the bench that much.
Okay, last Purdue question, then we'll get in the brackets. The last one I wanted to save was Michigan State, Kansas going on right now. But if it is Kansas, which obviously a lot of people are predicting, chances of Purdue upsetting Kansas?
I'd say less than 50%, but because I think that this is an athletic team. Unfortunately, you saw what Purdue did against the athletic front line in Louisville. Now, granted, you changed, but my problem is where the strength of the Kansas team is the backcourt. Obviously, for Purdue, it's a question mark. They're going to have to at least hold their own, and I don't mean outscore, but they're going to have to hit some shots, because if that backcourt plays like they did last night versus Kansas, no matter what Swanigan does, I don't think they beat them.
Iowa State.
I don't think they beat them.
Who do you think, this is the actual last question, who do you think the week off favors? Because obviously, both Self, it seems like, and Painter, when it comes to the tournament format, when it comes to their conference tournaments and March Madness, and you, of course, have the short turnaround time, seem to not do as well. So who do you think the week off favors? Because obviously, with it being the Sweet 16 game, they get a week off before they play again.
I would say probably Kansas, where just because I think they've had more success, generally speaking, than Purdue. Under Painter, this is kind of like rarefied air. I think the last time they did this is in 2010. Butler, yep. I think, has gone to 5 Sweet 16s since 2005, to tell you where things are. And I think Purdue just has to do what Purdue's been doing. Now, don't get ahead of yourself. Don't overthink yourself. Don't over anything. Just do what you do. And don't think about the stakes of this game, because you're two games from a Final Four, and the last Final Four Purdue's had was 1980. Just play your game. Self, I think he's a better coach than Painter, but I don't think it's as much as you think. I think if you gave Painter the talent Kansas has on Purdue, I think he could probably take it a little bit further. But it's not, because Kansas usually recruits McDonald's All-Americans. Purdue has one. I just think that Self has a slight advantage. But the self-coaching, you know, he won a 1 year with Kansas. It just seems like, for some reason, he just isn't as good as advertised.
He isn't. He's overrated. Him and Bob Stoops are two sides of the same coin. Constantly great teams, do really well in the regular season, get in the postseason, can't figure it out. Okay, let's talk brackets here, Pops. Obviously, we talked last week, but we previewed, and since then, we filled out our brackets. We're about halfway through day two of the second round. Tell me first, who are your Elite Eight and Final Four teams?
Well, I want to see where I'm at in the scheme of things, because I was playing Caboose earlier, and then I noticed yesterday I had managed to get to halfway there. I mean, granted, you seem to have nailed the first round. Hey, I'm up to third, so apparently I'm not as dumb as I thought I was.
Just for clarity's sake, I have my brackets in front of me. I have two that I did. I got 29 and 30 right out of 32 in the first round, and I lost SMU as a Sweet 16 team, and I was like, oh, it's pretty good. I lost two Elite Eight teams the first two games of day two, round two.
Well, I mean,
and my brackets got set on fire yesterday.
Here's my problem, Blair. I made my choices, and then I listened to some people, and I talked myself into going from Duke to Villanova and a couple other first-round upsets, when really the first day – it was chalk. 14 out of the 16 higher seeds won, and I'm like trying to play, hey, it's my upset special. Call me at 1-800. I don't know what I'm doing. Boy, the wrong year to do that.
Yeah, included in that, because Middle Tennessee was 12 seed beat Minnesota. Even, I know that's not chalk, but everyone, Vegas had that one as the win. Well, I don't know if that's not chalk. I don't know what is.
Apparently, Blair, it didn't get to me. So, and one of my teams that I picked, saying that I think they could make a run,
Xavier
Jerks from Notre Dame. Thanks a lot, Mike Gray.
Yeah, Tyler took him to the Final Four.
My Elite Eight. Okay, Villanova and Duke. Well, I lost Villanova. That's in the East. In the West, Notre Dame and Arizona. Well, I've lost Notre Dame. Midwest, Kansas and Oregon. South, UNC and Kentucky. I got six out of my eight.
That's not bad.
I only did one bracket because I only believe in doing one bracket, because I'm kind of like Ruxin on the league. I tinker with it. Like I said, I was literally going to the last moment. It was early Thursday morning, Blair, and I'm sitting there thinking, I almost could have flipped a coin. I just think too much instead of just going with my gut reaction. So I just did one bracket.
I did two for various reasons. So I have Nova Duke, Notre Dame Zona in both, UCLA UNC in both, and I had Iowa State and Michigan in one, and Iowa State and Oregon in another. The ones that I'm really upset with is USC. I was really high on. And then when I was like, okay, I'm going to pick them, and then I saw they were going against SMU, who I was believing in, I took SMU to Sweet 16. I got that one wrong. The Whiskey Double one, and this is going to sound like 2020 experience, but I really looked at that one for a while, but after I just decided against it, so I'm a little bummed about that one. The worst pick I think I made is I took Virginia into the Sweet 16, and I think if I would have done a little bit more looking harder at them, I wouldn't have made that pick, because that Florida game was a travesty. It was a joke.
Hold on, Blair. I think I might be... What the hell am I talking about? I actually did take Duke to the Final Four, so I was wrong. For some reason, I thought I took Villanova to the Final Four, and I didn't.
Maybe you talked yourself out of it.
That's all I was doing. It was kind of like, if you were in my bedroom, it was kind of like you think I was going crazy, because I was talking to myself. But I Go didn't ahead. Take Virginia, Blair. I took UNC Wilmington because I got to listen to a guy on ESPN, and the logic was pretty solid.
A lot of people talked about that one.
His logic was pretty solid. Virginia can't score. They can't. And so I took UNC Wilmington. I think they beat him by six. So then Florida flattened them. It didn't really bother me. That's another team. It's one thing to play defense, but you've got to score. I almost took a team to beat Florida, but I just went back and realized, nah, I'm going to go with Florida because I think they're better. I got Virginia losing just one round too late.
Right. So I'll do mine and you can do yours. The picks that have really hurt me, Notre Dame, which we both already touched on. I had them upsetting Gonzaga and losing to Zona. You and I are in the same boat there. I had Nova in both brackets losing to Duke in the Elite Eight. And then Iowa State is the one that hurts because I picked Iowa State in one bracket to go to the Final Four. And then another bracket, I picked them to upset Kansas in both brackets. It's just one I picked them to the Final Four and one I didn't. Those are the ones that are hurting me.
Explain to me your thinking, Gar Forman, because apparently you're on board with Gar Forman and Hoiberg and all the Iowa State guys.
Kansas is overrated. Iowa State, as you saw, shoots the ball extremely well. So basically, I picked Iowa State over Kansas and just assumed that Purdue was going to lose, which I don't feel like I'm wrong in. They almost made me right.
I'd like a little credit because I told you that I thought they could get to the Sweet 16, and usually I'm the one that's basically letting the air out of the tires out of the Purdue bandwagon, right?
I mean, yes. Congratulations, you got it right. I was happy to be wrong. That's the pick that messed up my bracket. I picked Iowa State against Kansas, assuming they were going to get past Purdue.
I knew Florida State, Blair, wasn't as good as their talent. I have no idea how the hell they lost 91-66 to Xavier.
They got rolled.
I mean, that I thought about Florida State, but I'm like, I don't know. Didn't I mention Xavier is a team to watch out for?
Yep. You said you were taking them to win two games no matter what.
Well, guess what? I managed to talk myself out of it.
I witnessed this. It's hilarious to me.
And then Rhode Island, I think, is better than people think because I think they said Rhode Island was a preseason top 25, had injuries, and then, I don't know, I guess I forgot about them, and so I took Creighton to beat them, and that didn't work out. Michigan is to the Sweet 16. That's surprising. I figured Louisville could handle them, but that's not the case. Right now,
Louisville's overrated this year.
So right now, Big Ten has three in the Sweet 16, right? Purdue, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and possibility with four with Michigan State. So maybe I might be eating crow because we kind of talked about the Big Ten being down. If they get four out of the Sweet 16, at least that's a statement for my money.
It is a statement. I mean, three I think is already a statement, especially because Duke still could get in. Notre Dame got bumped. The max here, I think, if I'm looking correctly, the max you could get into for the ACC, which, of course, everybody was slobbering over, is Duke and UNC, right? I'm not missing another one, am I?
For what?
For the Sweet 16, for the ACC. They don't have one in now, and Duke and UNC still play.
They got
it, right?
West Virginia. Oh, no, they're the Big 12, right?
Big 12, yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like to me. Well, I mean, this happens. You've seen this before. You talk about how deep it is, and then they get in the tournament and kind of go, and, I mean, they got South Carolina and Duke. They're only getting one out of that.
That's all that's left.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I guess so much for thinking they're the big boys on the block. Yeah. Let me ask you another question. How much thought did you give to taking Wichita State over Kentucky?
A lot. I did take Wichita State over Kentucky in one bracket.
I thought about it. I just think that I went with Kentucky because I think just too much talent overall. But, I mean, obviously, it was a close game.
I think the issue is, and I was actually just talking about this earlier with a friend of mine that's in our bracket pool, and obviously, again, Pops, you've been filling out brackets longer than I have. Doesn't it seem like this year the committee set up matchups to happen in specifically the second round as opposed to, like, seeding appropriately? Because, like, Wichita State is better than a 10 seed. Wisconsin, there's no way Wisconsin's an 8 seed, especially if Michigan State's a 9. What's another one? There's another one that specifically that stood out to me was those two, and I think there's another one now I'm drawing a blank on.
Michigan State?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
Rhode
them
Island?
Too. They're not a 9 seed.
Rhode Island?
Yeah, I think they're better than an 11.
Middle Tennessee?
They are definitely better than a 12. Minnesota was not a 5. I think that they rewarded Middle Tennessee by saying, hey, you're a mid-major, so we're only going to make you a 12, but we're going to give you a completely overrated Minnesota team.
I listened to the guy that heads the committee, and he tried to say that, no, we don't think about matchups post the first or second round because they have some sort of a system, but I can understand your thinking because, let's face it, some of these games look like clunkers, but the NCAA is really interested in making money. So if you're tinkering with this, you'd like to make interesting matchups that generate close games. And I think when you go to Kansas and Michigan State, they get your attention. Michigan, Louisville, that's name programs. You could argue North Carolina, Arkansas, but a Wichita State and Kentucky, that's a contrast. I mean, that's going to get your opinion.
Wisconsin and Nova. Can we just, again, I know we talked about this last week. Nova got boned. As the number one overall seed, they totally got boned.
What do you mean?
Wisconsin's not an 8 seed. They were going to play the winner of Virginia and Florida. And Florida especially, I think, even though they're a 5, is someone that a lot of people are, or they're a 4. Is someone a lot of people are forgetting about. And then they're going to play Duke, who I think deserved a 1 seed. They got, I think, by far the hardest bracket. It's not even close.
That's the problem, I think, where when I was sitting thinking last night, you'd like to think you could balance this thing, but after watching Villanova win, and you can make the case what you're making. From one year to the next, I've seen some Purdue brackets that are just crap. And then this year, it seems like they did Purdue a favor. The matchups and who's in your pod has played such a role. As opposed to balancing things to try to make it almost as difficult for everybody, it seems like from one year to the next, some favoritism versus like, no, we're going to screw this team. And that's the problem I have. The matchups, I think, you got to balance, I think, the brackets better to where it's almost as difficult for a team out west as it is for a team out east to get to the Final Four. And it seems like some of these matchups, and I think they did a bad job seeding some of these teams, it looks like they played some favorites with some teams, and other teams they said, all right, pal, you're going to earn this trip. And I think that's a problem I have with the committee.
I mean, I agree, because I think, just a couple off the top of my head, I don't think Louisville deserved a 2. I think that's reputation. I honestly don't think Kentucky deserved a 2. I think that should have gone to UCLA. I think Zona should have been a 1 over Kansas. Minnesota's not a 5. If Maryland's a 6 and Michigan State's a 9, I don't know how Wisconsin's an 8. The mid-major thing I'm not going to get into. Middle Tennessee should have been better than a 12, but it is what it is. Wichita State's better than a 10. Xavier's better than an 11. Those are just a couple. I just feel like they, and I know that pods have something to do with it, so I think for some teams, they can't give them a higher seed, then they make sure that they get into a pod where they're basically the home favorite. But I have a problem with some of the seedings this year, and it has nothing to do with my brackets. I just think some of the seedings are way off. And just back to what I was saying, it seems like some of these second-round matchups were set to be staged so that, as Pop said, you could get more money, because Michigan State, Kansas is going to get people's attention, even if Michigan State's down this year. They're named programs.
Well, right.
It's Kentucky, Wichita State, the announcers couldn't stop talking about how 2 years ago Wichita State was undefeated and met Kentucky as the 1-8 matchup, and then Kentucky knocked them off and went all the way to the championship game.
Right. It doesn't make sense. They're not being consistent on the seeding. They talked about rewarding. How is it you can reward the regular season and your performance in the conference tournament? You got to pick one here. You can't do both. And are you going to go for the long haul or what? And I think a lot of these teams are getting seeding based on name recognition as opposed to accomplishments. And that doesn't, yes. Like I said, I don't like the fact there's these damn play-in games to begin with. So let me piss on the parade of the NCAA. But these matchups, Blair, and the seedings, they didn't do them a really good job this year. The games in and of itself might generate the interest, and you haven't seen a lot of big upsets, but I don't know what the hell they were thinking. There's half a dozen teams that are underseeded, and I think the committee needs to go back and take a better look as to what they're doing.
Yeah, and just for clarity's sake, because I got into a bit of a discussion when it came to Kansas, you asked how do you reward based on regular season and conference tournament. That's the reason I have such a big problem with Arizona being a 2 seed. They tied the regular season, they won the conference tournament, yet they weren't a 1 seed, and arguably, okay, if the ACC is the toughest conference, the Pac-12, I think, has a stake in being number 2, because Oregon and UCLA, at this point, have looked to be real as well. And USC was a play-in game, which I think they were underseeded. They won 2, so I think the Pac-12 is making its statement.
Well, I think where they rewarded Gonzaga for 1 loss, but I think Arizona has, what, 4 or 5? The problem is, you need to take a look at the conference that Gonzaga played in, because outside of St. Mary's, it's rubbish. Versus Arizona having to go against 3 teams that you could argue. Oregon's a 3 seed. UCLA's a 3 seed. Arizona's a 2 seed, and that's out of 1 conference. So that's a tough road to hoe. And I think that they rewarded Gonzaga. They had 1 loss. Fine, we'll see. But I think they probably screwed up and didn't put Arizona. But I think they did Arizona a favor, because I think right now the pressure's on Gonzaga out west, yeah, as opposed to Arizona.
Before we leave brackets here, what do you have? Do you have any interesting upsets? Because you talked about it's kind of been chalk for the most part thus far. With the rest of the Sweet 16 that's left to be decided and the rest of the bracket, do you have any interesting upsets, ones that you picked that you're looking at? Like, for instance, in one bracket, I have Rhode Island over Oregon.
No, because pretty much after, and I've listened to Jay Billis talk about this, he said the opening round, Blair, is when you generate your upsets, possibly second round, but after that is the name conferences and the name teams take over, because they just have the better talent. The one upset I had was Notre Dame or Gonzaga. Well, Notre Dame bowed out. Other than that, it's just a higher seeded team, and I think that's a reason when I started out as crappy as I did, and I was like bringing up the rear of our group, I held the underwear. Apparently I don't know anything, but I'm like number 3. I went with more, I think 7 or 8 upsets in the first round, and I got most of them wrong. That's what put me behind you. But I think after that, I just kind of gone with more of your, I went with the higher seeded team. So generally speaking, outside of what, maybe Xavier, and I think there's 3-11 seeds that have advanced. This has been a tournament of the higher seeded team winning.
Higher seed from a standpoint of 1 through 4, but only, I think, on average, 1-1 seed makes it to the final four.
Right, but it's just, I think, again, the name programs, if it's not a one seed, but I think you're going to see a name program out of one of the Power Five conferences going in place of the one seed.
And so what is your final four again then?
Duke and Arizona, Oregon and UNC. So for me, Blair, I'm banking on Oregon to get past Kansas.
Well, we'll see. I'm not sure Oregon's going to get past Michigan, Pops.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
I have Duke and Zona in both, and then on one I have Oregon and UNC, and one I had Iowa State and UCLA.
Okay, so my big one, if you want to call it an upset, would be number 3, Oregon over number 1, Kansas. But it's not really an upset, but it's in from the standpoint of seedings, I guess you could call it that.
I suppose. I had Michigan and Iowa State in one, and then Oregon and Iowa State in another. I have UCLA and UNC in both. Is that what you have, or did you take Kentucky over UCLA?
Kentucky over UCLA.
Okay. So that one, I think that's one of the matchups that'll be obviously spattered about, because I think it's a rematch, but I think it'll be a good one.
ESPN won't have enough time to talk about it.
Right?
Because that's all they'll do.
Yeah, other than that, I guess we're pretty much in the same boat here.
For me to win our group, I got to get Oregon to the Final Four, I think, right?
I have Oregon in the Final Four in one of my brackets.
Jesus. We've got to put a rule. You can only put one damn bracket in. Now you're telling me I can't beat you. Because we have Arizona winning, right?
No, in that bracket, I have Duke winning.
Oh, well, I have
Zona in the Final Four.
Why did? Oh, okay, so I got Duke. I need Duke to go to the Final Four. Okay, we'll just see. I think we're to the point right now where the Power Five conferences get enforce their talent and will, and I think that's where you're going to more see some of these going forward, the name programs out of the name conferences.
Obviously, though, we're going to get a Big Ten Elite Eight out of the Midwest.
Yeah.
Purdue and Michigan, that's going to happen. Did you have Michigan over Louisville?
No.
Pops. I missed the upsets everybody was taking. Everybody took Michigan over
Louisville.
I got
the wrong upsets.
Everybody took Middle Tennessee over Minnesota.
I got the wrong upsets. Where you can throw something at me, but I apologize. I got the wrong upsets. I figured Michigan would have cooled off by now, but they're continuing to play as well as they have lately, so...
That's not a coach. I feel like, granted, his runs seem to come every handful of years, so he's like the Iowa football coach where, like, once every recruiting class, basically, they're pretty good. But Beilein seems to be that coach that I think once every recruiting class seems to put together a pretty good run.
Pretty sure he got a West Virginia team in the Final Four.
I don't know.
I think he did.
I'll defer to you on that.
He's a good coach, Barry. He's not his name recognizable, but he's a good coach.
Just deviating real fast. How much longer does Thad Matta get?
I'd probably think about whacking them now, but I think probably 2 more years, and then because from where they were to where they are, that's a precipitous fall, and I think I can't imagine Ohio State is going to really tolerate it much longer because they're not even making the tournament now, let alone winning the conference. And it's just things have really gone south for him.
Here's an update for you, Pops. Under 2 minutes left in the first half, Kansas 40, Michigan State 29.
Well, I took Kansas, so
I did too. Okay, so here's one last topic I want to squeeze in before we get to the beef. We talked about free agency a lot last week because obviously we were elbows deep into it. It's really cooled down now. And I'm kind of curious what Pops, your perspective is, because last week we talked about Cincinnati, who for some reason just isn't interested in bringing back their free agents. And I want to talk about Green Bay because there's articles written a lot about Thompson and Ozzie Newsome and the value they put on compensatory picks. And just a refresher, the rules are that compensatory picks are based on free agents you lose up until like June, I think. And they're players that their contracts expire. If you cut a player, then they don't factor in the compensatory picks. And that's why you see the Packers sign a lot of players that get cut from other teams because they don't factor into that. And so it's the players you lose versus Wade versus the players you sign, and that makes up the compensatory pick. So obviously it's why Green Bay, you don't see them sign a lot of players. They let their guys walk. They sign cut players, and they mostly do everything in-house, so they get those extra picks. And I'm just curious, Pups, as to where you think, because I think that at this point in time, you could really make the argument that Ted Thompson is not sabotaging, but wasting Aaron Rodgers from the standpoint of he's staunch againstness when it comes to signing free agents.
You can make that case where I think that not getting into the free agency, I think, is a little foolish. I understand you don't want to go crazy, but if you use it right, you might lose a compensatory pick. So what? You have to use free agency to your advantage and get guys to plug your holes, because you're not going to be able to necessarily do it with the draft. That's the reason it's there. I think you've seen what Belichick has done, getting going out and spending a lot of money on Gilmore. I don't know if that's from him, Blair. I don't know if it's from the committee that runs the Green Bay Packers, who don't necessarily want to spend the money. I mean, it might be coming from above over Ted Thompson. I mean, he might not be a frugal, you know, cheapskate. He might be for the people above him doing what he wants. But it would appear that you are wasting Aaron Rodgers. Granted, you won a Super Bowl, and so I mean, you think you've done better than what the Colts have done. But you'd like to think with him and the offensive talent that, you know, they lost Peppers, and I think they signed Martellus Bennett, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, they've lost Hyde, they lost Lang, they lost Treader, they lost, there's, I think, a linebacker in there, Peppers left.
Well, they lost Lacy, which I don't know.
Lacy left.
And the only relevance there is, what are they going to do for running back? But no, I think that you have to use it. You just, and here's the thing, just because you sign free agents doesn't mean you have to be stupid about how much money you spend. You could be smart about how much money you spend, but you use it to plug holes for a team that should be in a win-now mode. Again, you see what Belichick's doing this year. And because Rodgers is arguably one of the better quarterbacks ever, and the drafting is fine, but you just continue to spin your wheels in the postseason, and you're not getting all the bang out of what you're getting. Because if you have a one or two bad draft classes, you got a problem, and I would agree with you. I think they need to be more proactive in free agency to build this roster to try to win with Rodgers, because he's already 31 or 2, I think. And so, I mean, he is the focal point of that team.
I'm glad you clarified, because I'm not saying that they need to go out and be crazy, but it seems like Thompson likes to sit on his hands and sit on the pocketbook when it comes to free agents and just not get in the bidding wars. And the article I'm referencing, I think, was 2 years ago, and it was based on draft pick capital. And the Packers and the Ravens generally rate as two of the top when it comes to capital, because they value compensatory picks a lot, so they get extra picks. And I get it. I completely understand it. But, I mean, if you're a team that's supposed to win, like Green Bay, just look at Cincinnati. Now, obviously, Aaron Rodgers is way better than Dalton, and that makes up for holes in a roster. But look what Cincinnati's done basically in two seasons from letting all of those free agents walk. Well, they've just hit the cellar.
Look at Baltimore. Their relevancy has fallen off. And I think you could a direct correlation between drafting your guys and signing them and spending all that money on your free agents versus signing guys. And I think that they no longer are a team that you just expect to be in the playoffs. They're hoping to get in the playoffs. So the philosophy, according to what Ozzie Newsome doing, I think is a little bit outdated, and I think that's what you're seeing with Ted Thompson. The division is tougher for Baltimore to win versus the central division in the NFC for Green Bay. Green Bay generally can win the division. That's no big deal, because Detroit's been flying around. We know how bad the Bears are. Minnesota is okay, but they're not quite that good. So I think Green Bay has been able to do this and get into playoffs. The problem is when they need to win the playoff games, they can't, because they just don't have the talent of the other team.
The reason I brought this up is because it seems like more so in recent seasons, it's become something that's been a bit of a focal point, because I know McCarthy's mentioned it a couple times, and then Aaron Rodgers mentioned it after they got killed by Atlanta, that he said something along the lines of he wished they had the talent to compete and win championships. And I'm just kind of curious, Pops, do you think it could come to a headway at some point? Because Green Bay is usually lauded as one of those teams that has a lot of homegrown talent on its roster. But do you think it could come to a headway at some point? Because you have that, and then I know they won the division, but at some point the Packers got to quit playing this, oh, we'll wait until we need to win six in a row, because sometimes they're just not going to be able to hit that second gear.
No, I unfortunately...
Logic says they're just not going to be able to do that at some time down the road.
Unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is McCarthy is going to be blamed for this, and he'll be fired. And I think it's pretty obvious McCarthy is a pretty good coach. You can only do what you can do with what you got, and you need talent. I mean, because the great equalizer in the NFL is talent. He obviously doesn't have any say with what Ted Thompson does. Ted Thompson does what he wants. Ted Thompson has made some good draft picks. It's not like he's Phil Emery or Jerry Angelo, not a complete buffoon, but I think the thing of staying out of free agency, I think, probably needs to be altered to take advantage of the talents of Aaron Rodgers, because there's not too many other quarterbacks that you would take over Aaron Rodgers at this point. And so you've got to understand the window you're in and do your best to win as many as you can. And I think Green Bay, I understand why they don't want to do it, but apparently there's this thought that when pro owners get into free agency, that they take all ideas of thoughts and logic and throw it out the window and they spend like idiots. You don't have to spend like an idiot just because you're in free agency. Those don't necessarily go around in correlations. That's just the thought process of people. It's like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to pay this guy $18 million a year, and he's a kicker. No, just make smart moves, but you need to use free agency to fill holes, and Green Bay has holes.
Yes. Okay. Let's get you it for the podcast. Of course, we got one little segment here left, and usually save it up. Sometimes we beef a lot, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we need this little extra part to vent. It's called We Got Beef.
Where's the beef?
Pops, you got beef this week? Because I got beef.
Yeah, let me start with you, pal. Last week, you were telling me that there was sabermetric numbers for Stephen Gilmore that suggests he ain't as good as people thought. That's what your point
there
was?
Are.
Okay, let me explain something to you, Blair.
Okay, go ahead.
Stats are made up largely to what you want to say, because I can make a stat up that says that Rick's trash can's smarter than me, and then I could maybe come up with some other stats to say the trash can's better with me. Then once I get a collection of statistics, then I make an algorithm and a sabermetrics to say, look, the trash can is smarter than your dad, so let's go with this. That doesn't measure the heart and the will. So if sabermetrics was the end-all be-all, then you wouldn't need scouts in baseball. I just think that there's times when you could take a look at sabermetric numbers, but you can't just look at it that way. And I think that the Gilmore signing for New England was good enough for me to suggest that the Bears could assign him as an upgrade. So that's what I want to say. Second,
okay. Sure. Your argument was basically that I could use stats to say what I wanted, but you can also use things to say what you wanted.
No,
so
what I'm saying is, Blair, what I'm saying is, you can't just solely take sabermetric numbers and to be the judge of what you do. That doesn't take into consideration the human element.
I'll take sabermetrics over your gut feeling that, oh, the Patriots signed him, therefore it works.
Yeah,
I'll take my stats over your gut feeling.
Fine, I will be what Will Ferrell said, guts and balls. And what was the other one? You'll be kind of heart and mind. Remember that?
That's fine.
Okay.
You're beef, but your basic argument is that I can't use stats because stats can lie, but my gut feeling is because the Pats signed him, it works. That could be your beef, but I feel like you just hurt your own argument, so go ahead.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, of course you don't, because you're going with guts and balls.
Thank you. I don't know, but this whole Lamar Bell, is that his name, Lamar Ball, and Charles Barkley argument won't go away.
I think Lamar Ball as a whole can just be a beef.
Right. I think that now that there's a challenge of a basketball game between those two guys, and I think that Barkley come on and said, one of his mentors said, shut up, this guy will go away, because this guy played basketball and averaged 2 points a game. I think Barkley does this because I think he gets a kick out of it. I'm just tired of Lamar Ball. He's living vicariously through his kids. I don't know what the hell he's thinking, but it's obvious he's not as good as his kids, and I think it's a tired act that just needs to go away. Third one, Blair, is there was yet another Cleveland game last night where they decided to set everybody short of me and you, and that meant LeBron, Irving, and Love, and they went out to the Clippers and just got the shit kicked out of them. Second Saturday night in a row on a premium matchup on ABC. At some point, the people that pay the ad money to the NBA is going to say, hey, what the F is going on? Adam Silver, this is really a bad look, because it really says that you can decide to lose games when, A, that's really not what pro sports are about. B,
Right. You're
not giving a discount to people who pay premium price of tickets to those games, because had they known that LeBron wasn't going to play, they wouldn't have gone. And I think Silver's got to get off his ass and do something about this, because it's getting out of hand.
Yes. I have one beef. Mine is Colin Kaepernick. I think we just came along. I think it was like 3 days ago. Geno Smith agreed to a contract to be the backup of the New York Giants. Now, granted, I think that Kaepernick may have a little bit more rights than Geno Smith to be looking out for a starting job, but it seems as a whole to me that Colin Kaepernick is being shunned for the protest last season, and I think it's a joke because, again, not that this needs to be said again, but the NFL will sign rapists, drunks, drunk drivers, domestic violence, whatever. They'll get second chances, but a guy takes a political stance against something that is legitimately a problem in this country, and the NFL wants nothing to do with him. So that's my beef.
I think, Blair, you could make that case. Peterson might be being blackballed too. Now, granted, it might be the owners trying to set the running back market, but you could also make a case because of what he got charged with that maybe the owners are like, we don't want no part of this. I don't know. We'll see what happens because now the – and I don't get – here's another thing too. Marshawn Lynch is retired, correct?
Supposedly.
He's also under contract to Seattle. How the hell is Oakland talking about wanting him in such a way that if it was another player, let's say, who was under contract on an active roster, someone would be screaming, tampering, tampering, illegal, illegal. I don't get that either. I think it's just more the inconsistencies of the NFL and their own damn rules.
I don't really have an argument for that, so I'm going to just agree with you. That seems like that would be under the tampering.
So the only argument you have was my Stephen Gilmore point, right?
What, that it's feeling? Your argument was that I can't use stats because stats can lie, but because you feel like it's right, that it's right?
You can't just use stats only.
Yeah, but your argument was, yeah, but then you come back and say your argument is, well, I feel like since it's the Pats and they sign and apparently they do everything right, therefore it's a good signing. That's your argument.
Yes.
Okay, well, obviously one of our arguments stands a little bit more logical and is easier to support than, well, I just believe it.
Look,
so it's cool.
I mean, how much is it, Blair, that when New England cuts somebody, it's like there's 10 teams in line to get somebody, okay? And I think the other part is if Belichick cuts him, you probably don't want him. I've heard people make that argument. I would think if Belichick wants somebody, then to me that's good enough for the Bears to sign him. Because it's not like the Bears are like, no, we're okay. We got enough good cornerbacks. We don't need another one.
Well, you know, there's only really one way to tell. We'll see how that contract plays out.
Okay, we will.
That's going to do it for the podcast. Pops, refresh my memory. You sent me
outfielders. Yes.
And so you've got starters and relievers left.
Yep.
And then, is there one more basketball, or are you done with basketball?
Probably at least one more, maybe two.
One more basketball.
But I've got to try to wedge in two baseball articles and try to get that to you. I'm probably going to do starting pitchers next and relievers, and I'll do relievers last because I think they're probably have the least effect on your team. So we'll get the starters out to you by next week, and that is the 27th, and the baseball season starts April 2nd. So I'm going to try to get that done and get the closer article done, and then maybe come back and do another fantasy basketball article, and that's probably it.
So check those out. I know I'll be looking at the Cubs 25-man roster, which we will be talking about in the podcast coming up. But 3sportsguns.com is where the blog articles are. Thank you to our on-site producer, Rick Mason. We're in partnership with My Retro Radio. It's the Brushback Pitches podcast presented by 3 Sports Guns and 2 Gunthers. Blair.
Well, next week we will do baseball picks because you've been clamoring for that. So we'll do it next week.
Harold. And we'll catch you next week.
Join us next time for the Brushback Pitches. Find us online at 3sportsguns.com. That's the number 3sportsguns.com. This has been a Gunther Sports and Entertainment production in association with My Retro Radio.